Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Okay. How are you doing?
A little cold.
It's so cold, Dan.
Why is it so cold?
It's almost like it's winter or something, but it can't be because I live in Southern California.
It was like 80 degrees like a week ago.
I know. What happened? I needed more of this year to be 70 degrees and less of this year to be 80 or 50.
Seriously. What happened to the slow decline? It was like 3 days where it was like in the 70s and then just, nope, 50s.
I know. Yeah. It's almost like the global weather patterns have changed because of climate stuff. What?
A little bit. It seems unfamiliar.
Yes. Yes.
I recognize this pattern.
In these unprecedented times.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like we haven't had much precedent for the times in, I don't know, a while.
No. I saw somebody post a shirt that was a sweater that said, I would like, I would like precedented times more precedented times, please, or something like that. I can't remember what it was. And I was just like, yeah, that's a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're all just ready to coast for a little bit is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to set the thing to public so nobody can hear us. I'm so good at this. It's public now.
Okay. So yeah, no, I don't know. I'm so tired of everything. And then this latest news cycle. I mean, God knows, you know, when this episode comes out, maybe the world will have ended. It'll just be the cockroaches listening to this. We can get them a little
without tight. Making me too upset. Can you be more specific?
Oh, about like why I'm lamenting the general state of things?
About the news cycle.
Oh, no, just like increased transmission of things.
Oh, sure, that stuff. Yeah.
And you know, a certain stuff not really feeling super addressed, and the 1 year anniversary of something very bad happening is right around the corner. That's what would be fun to think about every holiday season, just like the anniversary of the insurrection. Anyway, things just don't feel like super fun and positive, even though we were all promised. I was very thoroughly promised that we would have canceled student loan debt and be full of vaccines and everything would be fine. We could walk around and do stuff. I feel like that the promise has not been kept.
Mm. You feel like you're owed something?
Yeah, you know what? I do feel like I'm owed something. The universe owes me.
What does the universe owe you?
I don't know, just like an easy time. I've had it up to here, Dan. It's what
vacation.
I'm saying.
a little bit of time off from things, yeah.
I
hear you.
Just like slow it down. Like, I would like to get back to the level of like, oh man, you know, work? Yeah, I hear you, man. Like, Mondays.
Living the dream. I can't remember where I saw it the other day, but you know, it was something like when you see somebody work, the only two responses are either, how's it going is, it's going, or living the dream. Both of which basically mean you're dead inside and you want to die or whatever, but.
No. The ultimate answer is fine. Or can't complain. Those are ones you can go with.
I'm here, aren't I? I think
well,
I've used those.
That sounds a little combative. But I guess the way I say fine might sound combative as well. It really probably depends on the inflection. But yeah,
you don't have any inflection.
That's part of the inflection.
I'm fine. You say it the exact same way in all circumstances because you always mean, please stop asking me questions. Please step away from me, and I don't want to talk about things.
Exactly. The inflectionless fine, in fact, has a lot of inflection. Granted, you know?
Yeah, when you say it's fine, it means let's move on from this conversation, this location, and just this sort of existential plane that we are currently on.
Yeah, and so after this fine conversation, we should probably talk about the movie. I had been lobbying for a while to do festive things for the holidays, and we were having a bit of a problem because we've gone through all of the like festive movies we really were, you know, interested in talking about. Your Home Alones, well, two of them. We're not dipping into the Home Alone 3.
Would that be Homes Alone because there were multiple?
What was the homes? Same house? No,
it wasn't in the second house. The same house in the second one.
Right, you're right because he was home alone, but he was in that house briefly at the beginning, but then he was alone in a different house, the uncle's and aunt's house. Okay.
Yeah, so, and also he was in the hotel room, which isn't really a home. I don't know.
No,
it's part of the alienation of the not being home.
Mm, yeah.
It's an ironic home.
Mm-hmm. Well, home is where the ironic heart is.
Did they have irony when that movie came out? When did The Home Alone 2 come out? Was that 89 or 91?
I think it was like 91 or 92. Because it was the year after Home Alone, because it was so successful, they like rushed this into production.
Right.
I don't think they
had irony back then.
No. And then they had Home Alone 3, which was just like cash grab. And then they had the one with French Stewart and Missy Pyle, which was directed like the Disney Channel, Home Alone 4. And then they've got that new one, which is directed Disney Plus, which is the one with the British kid.
A Good Day to Die, Home Alone, or whatever.
Yeah, God, I don't know what it is. It just the trailer for it made me like angry in a way that it shouldn't like actually upset me, because it's not like anybody took anything away from me. It's not like I am forced to watch it or anything. But just the fact that
did you become a Ghostbusters incel?
Yes, that's exactly what it did. the Home Alone thing turned me into a Ghostbusters incel. No, I just. It upset me that somebody would put money into something so, I don't know, just like empty. It felt like there was nothing there that you're making this thing out of. It felt like hollow. Not that Home Alone or Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, are, you know, artful masterpieces, but by comparison, I would say
you can't
that they probably
quite
are.
See the cash grab as obviously in those first two.
Yeah. Also, we were children, so that changes the perspective on stuff. And then we had, you know, we did our Elf and we did our Die Hard and Die Hard 2. You know, so we looked at William Sadler's butt in that one, we've petered off on holiday fare, but we had. Recently we just did a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas thing, which of course was not in 3D for us to watch or in 3D for you to listen to on the podcast. But that,
I mean, you could probably force the spatial stereo on your, we release our podcast in mine. Never mind.
Yeah. I also was,
did you know
that
was a
thing?
Work. I recently just discovered that, like, I thought a lot of people were doing spatial music stuff in Apple Music. There's actually just a button in the AirPods where you can just say like, make this stereo track spatial, whether it is or not.
I did not know that you could do
that. It just adds the head tracking to basically any stereo song.
The other day, Jason, He was talking about spatial audio and how crazy it is, and he's like, why can't I get that in my car? And I was like, I just looked at it for a second, and I was just like, because it's based on when you move your head, so you're moving your head in your car, so you're already moving it through where the audio is. He didn't get it, and I was just like,
just say you actually do have it. It's a CarPlay update. Just turn your head back and forth rapidly, and you'll really feel it.
He just doesn't understand the concept, really. Mm. But anyway, we had exhausted a lot of holiday stuff, and then I had been lobbying for Moonstruck, and then
didn't you say this movie had some Christmas themes in it or something?
No, I didn't say anything about Christmas themes. I just said it had Christmas in it. Like, there are Christmas trees in this movie, and that is the level of Christmas that exists.
Where?
In the Met lobby area. Well, not lobby. The courtyard of the Met. It's like hanging out. There's Christmas trees. It feels more like a January kind of thing, because they didn't have a Christmas tree inside their house.
I must have missed that. Yeah, it's just it was cold. I guess that's on theme for the show, right? It's cold. Yeah.
Cold.
Climate. You know, I should have worn gloves when I walked the dog, because my hands were very cold, and there's at least, you know, one-handed gloves in this movie.
Yeah, when Olympia Dukakis handed the dad from Frasier her umbrella so that she could put on her gloves, I was like, oh, that's what I'm missing. I need to go find my gloves so I can sit here in the living room with gloves on. But
you know, we always talk about air conditioning and how places in California often don't have air conditioning. I've never really asked about the status of places in Los Angeles and central heating.
Oh, well, you'll be happy to know we have central heating.
Mm.
You'd be unhappy to know it does not work.
At all?
No. Well, see, it's sort of a Schrodinger's central heating scenario, because it doesn't work in terms of you do something on the thermostat and it comes on, which makes me suspect the pilot light isn't lit. But rather than paying anyone to come out and look at or do anything to the heating device, nothing's been done. So we have a space heater in Jason's office, and then we have another larger space heater that we keep in the primary bedroom of the home, and I have been moving it up to my office in order to make it warm enough to enable me to work during the day. And then I carry that back inside and then set that back up in the primary bedroom or in the living room sometimes if we were really going to, you know, sit at the couch for a while and bask in the warmth of the space heater.
You know, at some point you might want to consider having somebody, you know, just turn it on.
I would think that that would be the kind of thing that logically people would want to do if they were amenable to doing such things and didn't just like put off any sort of home repair project at all.
Just call an HVAC guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could have and should have, would have done that. But time has gotten away from us in this festive season, yeah. So it'll be a new year project.
That will happen. Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Yeah.
It could also just be like, does it like kick on with the thermostat and then just like doesn't blow hot air?
Oh no, nothing.
It doesn't do anything.
Yeah. So that's why I think it's the pilot light. But you know,
well,
you just got to have somebody come out and look at it. Say it'll cost $6,000, and then we'll just take it from there.
If the thing is functional, it won't cost that much. The only reason I ask is because when we had the power cord to the big attic unit that heats and cools our home, like the little prongs melted, so we had to put a new cable on it, or was it the outlet or something? Anyway, he wired the cable such that the prongs of the outlet were backwards, so it would kick on, but it wouldn't like stay on and get hot, and we just had to reverse those two wires, and then suddenly everything worked again.
Did you reverse those wires?
No. we hired an electrician.
Well, you said we had to reverse. I was just like trying to picture you in the attic reversing wires, diffusing a bomb.
I've put light switches in. It's the same thing. You get two wires. One goes on one side. One goes on the other side.
So what? Exactly. Yes. Well, you can come out here and set up all the light switches for us. When you put in your light switches, did you put in like the Lutron Caseta, smart dimmers and all that?
We have a Wemo smart light switch on our front, like the lights on our garage / in front of our front door, which turns it on at a certain time of day. I have another one of those still in the box that I just haven't bothered to put in. I haven't figured out where to put it. And then I think I was just going to put it in my office here, so I didn't have to walk five steps over to the light switch when it gets dark at 4:45 PM or something, but I haven't done that either.
Yeah. See, I want dimmer switches in the living room, dining room area. Because why am I blanking on the names? We have overhead in the ceiling recessed lighting. But they're states of being, well, no, they're the more modern styles. They're not like the 1980s ones, but, their state of either being on or off is a very extreme. And I would like something probably like 40-60% brightness, you know.
Just buy less bright light bulbs, or just like halfway unscrew half of them.
No, but I also, you know, as part of the project, I would also like everything to be like smart in the house that I replace anything with, you know. And I don't want to replace them with smart bulbs and then not use the switches because that would be stupid. So I want to have like smart dimmers on all the stuff.
Sounds like a very reasonable, ambitious project that will be put off into oblivion.
I know. Because, I'm not going to do it. But at the same time, it's just like, do I hire an electrician to install three switches?
Yes.
Seems insane. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. You could have a handyman do it and then to just burn your house down. But you, at the very least, you have a volunteer to come light your pilot light in our YouTube chat here. Austin says he'll do it. He said it's really easy.
No.
Well, at least
he's not invited.
In a lot of instances, I mean, you know, on our water heater, lighting the pilot light is you hold a thing down and you click a button. I don't know what the pilot light on your HVAC unit is like, but
it is in the attic over Jason's office. So
you're not
I don't know
in
why
the attic.
Yeah.
You're not going to go in there at all?
No, I don't want to go in the attic. Why would I want to go in the attic, Dan? I went in the crawl space of the stupid house. That was enough.
I don't go to crawl spaces are gross. Attics are fine.
I don't know. I mean, I saw the
just
photos.
Just wear long sleeves and long pants because there's insulation up there and you're going to get dusty and itchy.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the photos of what it looks like when they did the home inspection. And they said that the heater was serviceable in the home inspection. You know,
serviceable.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That was the word used.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know.
Austin, go light Joe's pilot light.
No, don't leave my pilot light alone. I don't want to burn down the house, please.
Burn down the house. If you don't smell gas right now with the pilot light off, you're fine.
Okay. I don't know. I don't want to rock the boat. I want to have a professional rock the boat.
Freeze is what you're going to do. Yeah, just be cold forever.
Just be cold forever. Buy more space heaters.
when they come to pull your frozen dead body off of the ground, just make sure you leave a sticky note that says I'm fine.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I was thinking about the other day is like, what? Because if Jason wants to buy another space heater, then I would have a full-time space heater up in the ADU, but then I started being afraid of what if I accidentally forgot to turn it off? And then I was like, well, what if I put it on a smart switch? And then I was like, does it really make sense to plug in a space heater to a smart switch into the outlet in the wall? And like,
as long as it can handle the wattage, sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Everything about this makes me so fearful. I just would like central heat, please.
Is the switch a GFI?
Yeah. I don't know, Dan. What's a GFI?
It's the type of switch with little buttons in the middle that trips a circuit.
Oh, it's not a bathroom, Dan. Well, it's a living room.
You can put a GFI wherever you want to put a GFI.
But again, why? I don't want to wire anything. Why am I putting a GFI there?
I'm not saying you have to, but I'm saying you might have one.
Okay, so
plug it into a GFI in case your space heater goes haywire. It'll trip a circuit and it won't burn your house down.
But it's not a GFI right now. I could tell you that.
Plug it into the GFI. Don't you have a little kitchen sink somewhere nearby?
No, there isn't anything I could plug it into right here that would be an effective space heater that is a GFI.
Well, get an extension cord and run it to the kitchen area up there in the bathroom
that,
or something.
That also seems safe. I've seen enough of those goofy Walt Disney like 1950s videos of him like plugging everything into like outlet extenders that catch on fire to know that you don't do that.
Just go get one industrial size extension cord from Lowe's and run that to where it needs to go.
I don't know. I just want stuff to be fixed instead of like patching things up.
Well, then it sounds like you're going to have to call an electrician.
I know, which is going to be something I do in January. But anyway,
you
know,
this is the problem when you when you don't when you're not honest with the people in your life and you just hope things are going to work out on their own. Whereas, you know, what we learned is that you give everyone a bowl of oatmeal and you're open and honest with everyone, then things will work out the way they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. That was a beautiful transition, Dan.
Thank you. That's what happens in the movie.
Yeah, it is. It's nice that you took that away from it. I'll assume that
the
you made that
part
reference
or the being
because
honest
it was
the part.
Well, all of it, really, because I assume you only made that reference because it's the end of the movie and you just finished watching it.
But, I've seen the end of the movie a few times too. But yeah, this is the first time I've watched the movie all the way through. So, sure.
Yeah,
there's not a whole lot more to the movie.
No, it's a very light thing because it's also short and it weirdly
it's
has
it's not very intense. I mean, it's not not very, I was gonna say it's not very deep, but you know, there's a fair amount of complex human emotion that they're attempting to relay here. It's just it's a movie about relationships and marriages and love and stuff, and they don't make movies like this anymore.
And there's a little farce in here, you know, because the guy who wrote this, I think he's a playwright. So there's a lot of scenes that, you know, kind of function as they would if it was like a stage play. So you get like your back and forths and your witty what have yous and like people coming into and leaving a room. It's very, you know, play like not a lot of, you know, walk and talks in this, but it is charmingly old fashioned in that way, I think. It has a lot of character. Also, I don't know about for you, because I know you have an Italian side sort of to your family, but I have I have an Italian side of my family, and there's a lot of this. This is very reminiscent of the older part of that family, the generations that came before, like my, you know, grandfather and grandmother and stuff on that side.
Ours was much less loud than the Italians in this movie.
Yeah, well, you know, they're not always loud. Cosmo's pretty quiet for the most part.
Yeah.
And the cranky dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's we don't have a lot of shares in my side of the family. Yeah, I suppose we have some Cosmos and then Cosmo's dad or whatever.
Yeah. Do you have any Olympia Dukakis's? Rose Castorini's?
No, not really.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I like it. You know,
she was one of the Academy Award winners of this movie, if I saw correctly on the Wikipedia page. Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, Cher, Olympia Dukakis, and the writer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think one of the most jarring things about this movie that intrigued me while watching it is the age differences between people, which is not as dramatic as you might expect. Olympia Dukakis apparently had Cher when she was 15.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let's see, with Danny Aiello is what, like, he was like 15 years older or something. And then Cher is like 18 years older than Nicolas Cage or something in this.
Yeah. Although Cher looks closer to Nicolas Cage's age than to, sorry, Danny Aiello, but you've always looked kind of old. Or you
the
did.
Hair wasn't doing him any favors.
No. Remember
he's kind of always looked the same age, hasn't he?
Yeah, basically. I remember when he was like furiously rubbing his scalp for the blood flow. It's interesting that they chose to go the like nerdy girl takes off her glasses or whatever, like dyes her gray hair route with Cher, because she just looks like Cher the entire time. So it's like,
I kind of wish I had better context for where Cher was in her life when she made this movie.
I think this is around her If I Could Turn Back Time era. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was later into the 90s.
Was it later into the 90s?
I don't know. I feel like we should look that up, though.
Yeah, I mean, this is an important thing to really think about, I think.
Cher, Turn Back Time. 89!
Yeah.
Wow.
See, I knew it.
2 years later. Wow.
Yeah. She could find a way.
Did not expect that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I don't know what John Mahoney and Olympia Dukakis' age difference is.
Oh, good question.
Yeah.
John Mahoney has always been old. 60. Yeah. Let's see. He was born in
1940. Oh,
he's 7 years younger than her?
Apparently.
Wow.
Yeah.
John Mahoney. He must have gone white with his hair when he was like 26.
Probably. But, you know, John Mahoney, he's just always. Always that way in my mind. Anyway,
most well known for sitting in a very ugly recliner with a small shaggy dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the patriarch of the Frasier family. But
sure,
yeah, he's a small part in here. Speaking of age differences, where he gets water thrown in his face twice for
he's a teacher or something, and he's dating students. Is that what was going on there?
Basically, yes.
Yeah. Interesting that he manages to, I don't know, maybe it was just a thing in the '80s. Like it was more popular to throw water in people's faces at dinner or something, but, he really manages to trigger that same reaction multiple times.
Yeah. Also, you would think that because that happens frequently for him, that he'd be more well known in the establishment, or that, Castorini family would have come across him before. But
you got to believe by the third time it happens, they're just going to bring him a glass of vodka on their own without him having to order it.
Yeah. And clear away this stuff. No evidence of that person ever being here.
Part of it it makes me feel like, you know, like he's running a scam. Like he's trying to get they're still dating, that he just does that so he can get like her part of the meal for free or something. And then gain some sympathy from from the waiter or whatever to get a free drink out of it.
I don't know. That would be a weird and probably not long-lived scam that you'd be running. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. This movie's charming in that way. And the sort of obstacles that the characters overcome or deal with, like, you know, water in the face, etc., or forgetting a bank deposit, or my mother's dying in Sicily. Like, there's stuff in here that all just kind of seem sort of quaint and entertaining in a different kind of way.
I had a nickel for every time my mother was dying in Sicily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember when she goes to the airport and you could just, like, walk up to the gate?
Yeah. I'm old enough to have done that in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, same. But it's just been so long that it's so strange to see it depicted in a film. And then, you know, the older lady who's there who put a curse on the plane.
Yeah,
just like, why
fun.
Is this in the movie?
And she says, I don't believe in curses. And the old lady says, I don't either. But, you know, it's worth a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was some, I was just looking through Wikipedia, some of the old reviews at the time, whatever, Roger Ebert and the guy with the hair, I forget his name. You know who I'm talking about. Anyway, but, you know, they were, you know, saying there's a lot of people who sort of misread this movie.
Gene Shalit?
There you go, Gene Shalit. Uh-huh. Misread this movie as just a sort of, like, generic, like, Italian cultural comedy kind of thing, but there's actually there's some reasonable humor in there. You got Nicolas Cage doing Nicolas Cagey things. You've got some fairly clever writing to the whole thing too, and it is fairly earnest about its, you know, approach on relationships and romance and giant moons and all that stuff too. I'll be honest, having never seen this before and having missed most of those, like, lesser known scenes, this is the first time I actually understood why it was called Moonstruck. That was good, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good movie. It's a good small 80s movie, of which I am a fan in general. This is not so much the type of 80s movie that I watch, but
not a ton of action and adventure in this one.
There's no Kevin Costner in it, so it's like, you know, really, what's the point?
Yeah, well, I mean, but you have Nicolas Cage, and this is, I
believe, those two things are not interchangeable.
wouldn't that be funny if you had Nicolas Cage in Field of Dreams or Nicolas Cage's Tin Cup? No,
that would be, it would be insane.
Which I argue might be an improvement. But
by the way, as an aside, did you see the trailer for the movie where he's playing himself?
Yes. Yeah, I was going to work our way towards that. He's on the other side of the looking glass now, where he is in a film that makes fun of himself in a way where he's, I don't even know though if, like, he must have a level of self-awareness, but does he have a level of self-awareness about how this trailer is? Does he know how he is inside of, like, how meta removed from himself can he be when he reviews and thinks about these things?
I don't know. Yeah. It's like being John Malkovich, but for Nicolas Cage. It's just, it's so strange.
Very strange. And it was also a weird coincidence to have it start off with Neil Patrick Harris, and he's in, like, that, was sauna or Russian bath or whatever with him. And it's just like, what? Because they're trying to pretend like this is, you know, Nicolas Cage's real life, and they do weave in some things like his infamous money problems.
I could see him hanging with NPH.
Yeah, I guess. But it is curious. It's all just very strange.
What was the thing of the money where he saw the wax figure that was supposed to be like him, and he said, it's hideous, so I'll give you $20,000 for it.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah. Which is, you know, making fun of his ego and also his spending. But it is interesting to think about, like, put that version of Nicolas Cage up against this version of Nicolas Cage in Moonstruck, where I don't know if this is apocryphal or not. I didn't bother Googling before we started talking, but he, I think, had a tooth removed so that he could experience the pain, like full method acting kind of pain of the character, you know, having lost his hand.
He was missing a tooth, so.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's actually true, but I... since I didn't look it up, but I'm going to assume that it is just because it's Nicolas Cage. But he, you know, he was the Jeremy Strong of his era. At the time, you know, he was committed to this craft and his performance, but it is very different kind of than even he was in the 90s and the, you know, early 2000s.
He sure had a lot of energy.
Yes. He's very committed to these things, too. And people always forget that he's a Coppola on top of it all. So, you know, drama.
I feel like I forgot that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I knew that. But he's like a cousin or something, right?
Yeah, he's blah, 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 blah. Where's the thing? Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Your nephew of Francis Ford Coppola, and of actress Talia Shire, who, you know, was in The Godfather.
Sure, I know that. Yeah. I know exactly who Talia Shire is.
She was Connie.
Okay.
Who got beat up, and then...
Oh, sure, yeah, the sister, yeah. Sure, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and then...
With the crying and the throwing of the plates.
And then Sonny straightened out that guy.
Look what they did to my boy.
Mm-hmm.
And such. Yeah.
So, we should talk about The Godfather sometime.
Oh. Are we allowed?
Why are we not allowed?
I don't know, it's like the greatest movie of all time, we're just a couple of dinguses over here.
Oh, it hasn't stopped us before, Dan. Also, the people...
We've never really approached the cinematic masterpiece. Like, I don't know. I mean, watch, like, Lawrence of Arabia and stuff? I don't think I've ever seen that one.
No, I mean, I would only want to talk about it if we felt like we had something to talk about with it. Little known fact.
Cinematography is, you know, good.
It's very good. Speaking of cinematography, this is David Watkin did this one, although there's nothing super remarkable about the cinematography of this film. I like that one shot he did. Yeah, very shot on film. You can tell because the focus is often not on the character's eyes.
Well, they catch up to it like right as they're about to cut away. Like it racks the focus right at the end of the shot. And you're like, oh, not fast enough.
Yeah, and then, but that's really like the focus puller. You know, there are some interestingly planned, contrived shots of, like, when Cher goes up to talk to Olympia Dukakis at the beginning. She's lying in bed, and you see Cher in the mirror on the bureau or the wardrobe that's on the wall there. So that way you can frame a two-shot with them all in the same thing. But
yeah, there's a couple of those.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, it's just, like, the rest of the film is, like, easy breezy, not a problem.
Yeah, but like I think I've mentioned this before, but the first time I saw any of the scenes from this movie, it was when Cher first meets Nicolas Cage, was in one of my directing classes in college, and it was praised for its blocking and scene direction, and you know, just the use of camera angles to sort of tell the story, and you know, because you know, you got that cool low angle when he hits the whatever, like, tin can of something with his wooden hand and stuff, and you know how he moves from A to B, and then the camera crosses the line and blah 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 blah. So there's a lot of classic, you know, well thought out film. I mean, it's basically staging too, because as you said, this is like a stage play kind of thing, but it's a good movie for both character blocking and staging, and you got your cinematography that works into there too. There's a lot of reflection shots like that. And yeah, I mean, the lighting isn't overly interesting, but
no. And there's a little known fact about David Watkin, which I had known about prior to watching this episode, is that he invented the Wendy light, which is a bunch of lights, really bright lights, put together in a big array, way off in the distance, so that you could fight exponential fall off or whatever to make it seem like it wasn't just one light source close to your character, but it's probably what he's most known for. And then the other thing he's known for is falling asleep on set. so that's
I thought that was Taika Waititi's new thing.
Oh, well, maybe Rita Ora has tired him out, I guess. But
no, he just like I think he said it's like a stress thing, like he takes naps on set when he gets stressed out.
Good for him. I don't know. I don't understand people who can sleep when they're stressed out. I am the opposite way. I will not sleep if I am stressed out. So how does one even approach napping?
I don't know, but I'm just on David Watkins' page here, and he's got a whole Wikipedia subheading called Watkins Casual Approach, which is, that should be the name of his restaurant or something.
Well, he's dead, so he won't be opening a restaurant, but he was very old, too. But he
it's the only thing you can do on set that doesn't make you more tired.
Yes.
I mean, you're not wrong, but, like, also, that has nothing to do with set.
No, it is probably also not a great sign when I believe he has a role that was written into a different film of him being a sleeping judge as a bit part thing, specifically with him in mind because he falls asleep on set. But, you know, whatever. I guess it's better than being up to trouble, tweaking some lights in your method actor's eyeline or whatever and having them melt down. But this is... You know, it's not super artsy. I think the thing that probably is the most bad about this, other than the focus pulling, is the bad matte shots of the moon and New York City skyline.
I can't even call it a day for night, but whatever process they put the skyline through to make it try and sort of look nighttime-ish.
Yeah, it is very painterly in terms of what the exposure could possibly be in those scenarios. Not as bad as that one Ted Lasso episode where the moon is like blue and reads as crystal clear, even though it's supposed to be out of focus. But there's just a lot of weird stuff going on because of the technical limitations at the time. But it is strange to me, like in that one shot of Cher waking up in Ronnie's bed and going to look out the window. I don't know why that wasn't just like us, you know, a psych or another backdrop, instead of trying to make it an optical shot, because then you have all the sizzling stuff that's all around all the blinds edges. It doesn't seem to lend anything to your work when you're doing that. But, you know, sometimes people shoot things without thinking about how it's going to look in the final product. And then you just got to work with what you got.
Yeah. We don't know anything about that.
No. But it obviously doesn't impact or impair the important parts, and it, you know, works with what the storytelling is.
It doesn't really affect Cher's performance.
No, because the whole thing is like, oh, wow, did you look at that moon? Like, that is a surprisingly large amount of what this movie is about. Is the moon is so big, it has affected their lives and caused them.
How big is it?
Yeah.
Big enough to make people fall in love and old men horny, apparently.
Yeah. Yep. Still don't love the uncle. It's just not a good acting performance from him. But
oh, really?
Whatever.
You had a problem with his acting performance?
I didn't love him.
Hmm.
Uncle Raymond. He's not very good. Sorry, Louis Gus. But
that's how they used to do it in the old world.
you gotta love everything else that's going on here in terms of the acting. You know, you got your. I still think Cosmo, like, as the plumber showing up at that couple's house, telling them about how they need brass pipes,
copper. Come on,
copper pipes is an amazing scene. I love his dedication to that, and then his retelling of it to Mona, to impress her, because he's like such an alpha male when it comes to copper pipes.
I mean, he scraped the pipe with his little pocket knife and he could tell it was the wrong material.
Yeah, it's garbage. So
I liked his glasses. They were very unusual.
I think those kinds of glasses only work on his face type specifically.
I got a giant fat head. Yeah. Can I get away with them?
I don't know, but you don't have, like, your mouth is not like a sturgeon though. It's not exactly the same,
what about the glasses he's wearing in his IMDb photo? Okay, could I get away with these? They're basically like the 1950s version of what I already wear.
Well, I don't have that photo in front of me, so I'll just answer yes.
I can't copy a link to things on IMDb anymore because IMDb is bad. Maybe this works. Let me see if this works.
Pinterest of movie trivia.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are more normal glasses, but I don't know. I was never a huge fan of, like, the big, you know, like, acetate chunky glasses.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got a big acetate chunky face, so it works. Mm-hmm. One question, though. Has this movie, I know that this is not the way time works and it's the wrong way around to think of things. Has this movie been diminished at all in your memory by things like My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
No, because I haven't seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Wow.
Or the sequel.
You haven't seen it, and you're also not aware of its sort of cultural implications. Just that it's the modern version of this movie, you know, the big, large, loud ethnic family and relationships and crap.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. I didn't see it.
Mamma Mia for Greek people.
that takes place in Greece. Too. It was made later.
it's not really the same thing.
So I mean, it's not this, but it's sort of like in terms of your descriptors matches. But so
in Greece is not the same as has Amanda Seyfried in it, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
Meryl Streep.
Yeah, and James Bond and the other guy.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan and what's his face? He was a Kingsman guy.
Yeah, that one. You know, yeah. Everyone knows who we're talking. Colin Firth.
Yes, Colin Firth.
And then who's the third one?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Not important to the story, Dan. But
it's important to filling up time.
We don't need to. We could fill up time with good stuff. We could talk about good things about this movie. What did you like about this movie? Do you respond to any like quotes in here? Have you heard quotes from here a lot?
Of course, I've heard quotes from the. I mean, everyone knows "snap out of it" and "slapping him."
Yes, twice.
Yeah, exactly. It's what are the other good quotes from this movie?
Are you asking me or are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm asking you. What are other good quotes from this movie? Oh,
do you love him, Loretta? I love him awful. Oh God, that's too bad. Like that's great.
Yeah, I mean, one of the other things that I like that is not really a quote is when she tells him to stop seeing his girlfriend, and he stands up and pounds the table and just sits back down and says, "Okay." Yes. Very good.
Yeah, his life is built on nothing, and then and she corrects him on that.
A lot of teary eyes. You know, it's all of the emotions. You got comedy, you got seriousness, you got sadness, you got all of it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then
I feel like she got off easy though with two rosaries, with you know the infidelity and stuff.
Yeah. Also, I guess this is one of those occasions. You know, it was different back then where you would be going to confession so often at the same church that you would have a rapport with your priest who would recognize you voice only.
You're not supposed to know who the people are. That's the point with the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, you know, he knew that it was Loretta and then she was unfaithful. And then, yeah, two rosaries is not that much, but she doesn't do them. So, you know, yeah. But that's because she's feeling so conflicted.
We don't know that she didn't do them. She had a rosary in her hand when she kneeled down next to her mom.
Yeah. And then, you know, her mom's pressing around. I don't want to talk about it.
I do enjoy that this movie sort of showed off the, you know, complicated nature of families. And especially like a larger family like this. You know, you got like Loretta's whole thing is like her husband died and stuff. And, you know, the way that everything is not just so like cut and dry, cookie cutter. Family-wise, and it's not a Norman Rockwell painting, you know, by any stretch. So, like, that feels honest and nice. You know, probably New York has a lot to do with that, too. But that's a nice backdrop to the story, too, that makes it feel a little bit more lived in and kind of realistic.
Yeah. And you also get the weaving of these storylines together, because it's infidelity, like, across this entire family, basically, where you have Cosmo and Mona, and you have Loretta trying to settle for Johnny but falling in love with Ronnie, and then you have Olympia Dukakis's character Rose, who, you know, knows something's going on and just wants someone to talk to, and she contemplates but rejects the idea of cheating on her husband. So it is interesting to see those three things put together like that, because it makes it seem a little less cut and dry and black and white.
Yeah, it doesn't have any particular take on like morality or right and wrong. It's more about just, you know, people and relationships and commitment and stuff.
Right, because this movie does not say cheating is wrong. Quite the contrary.
It says go for it if it's love and stuff.
Yeah, it's like if it's meant to be, then you got to do it. You know,
what's right for you.
Yeah, you shouldn't settle for someone who isn't right for you. And at the same time,
don't be a shithead.
Yeah, you also shouldn't, you know, go out and look for someone else because you're afraid of your own mortality, basically, is what they unsubtly hint at as the reason why Cosmo has been going out with Mona.
That was a good line, too. Just want you to know, no matter what, you're going to die like everybody else.
Yeah. It's very loving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's good to see those relationships, like the back and forth of all of that, work together.
Yeah,
so I appreciate that.
It manages to be amusing and endearing without being preachy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which I guess is okay if you're not really saying anything in particular,
right? But this movie is also like, it's such a time capsule too, in a way, because I don't think there are families who are like this right now, really. You know,
you mean a plumber and a stay-at-home wife homemaker who have like a three-story home in the middle of Brooklyn?
Yeah, no, definitely not. They're dead, and their home has now been converted into a live workspace by some
if
kind
it exists,
of
as it once did. It costs $12 million.
Yeah, it would be impossible. Yeah, I mean the copper pipe in that house alone, worth a fortune, but. Yeah.
Gotta keep away from the methods.
Yeah, and God knows what happened to Bobo. He's not serving tables anymore. Who knows what his deal is? But
was Bobo the older one that was like making the cry face?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm. He's dead.
This movie has like a certain flavor to it that I don't think is representative of New York. Were Italian Americans in New York at the moment, which is just interesting, just like in a time capsule kind of way.
Nobody even ordered any gabagool at any point.
I've never seen Sopranos.
I've seen very little of it.
No, I didn't have HBO at the time, and then now it just seems daunting because there's a lot of it.
Sure, I mean, you just start, turn through it, it'd be fine. Where was I was it a podcast or something where they were explaining how the word became gabagool?
I don't know what you're referring to, but yes.
Oh, you're familiar with the fact that he says gabagool.
Yeah, it's capicola ham that he's talking about, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. You do understand it's the same thing, and like how one became the other is a thing.
I don't know the thing though.
It's just an explanation of how, you know, language in New York and accents changed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because also a lot of the people regionally are from Naples or Sicily and have a different colloquial way of speaking than like people in Rome or something. Mm. So even on that basis alone, before you start like the evolution of like handing it down with your kids and stuff, and that process here, the melting pot of different people talking to each other. So yeah, it's not altogether surprising that it is deviated.
That's
severely.
A funny word though.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Say it. Do it. Say it.
Gobble. I think it's the gaba. That's the,
yeah,
it's pretty funny. But it's, then yeah, the ghoul on the part, the gabagool, yeah.
It's what an Italian turkey says.
Damn. we are not here to disparage our ancestors.
I can make that joke. I'm part Italian. I'm a quarter Italian.
We're all part Italian on this podcast. But no, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is just a fun movie. I'm glad we watched it. And you get to see the proto beginnings of Nicolas Cage and his I lost my hand, my bride, Johnny has everything.
Yeah. He was 23 years old, is that what it was in this movie?
Sure.
That's insane.
The studio didn't want him for the part. Cher lobbied for him to get the part. I thought it was the perfect guy for the role. So
yeah, I think he was born 38 years old.
I really can't imagine him any younger than that.
Do you think one of the main reasons they hired him was just the volume of chest hair? They're like, oh, we're going to use that to our advantage. Get that right out in the open.
No, I think it's because he would commit to shouting, probably. I have to imagine his audition was loud. Very loud.
Yeah. I mean, how many movies did Cher do?
Not a lot. But she did Mask, which I think was before this.
Which one was that? Is that the one with the guy?
Yeah. But where is...
Yeah. Wait, she's in this movie?
She's done so much stuff that her Wikipedia page is actually
Sam
kind of
Elliott's
impossible.
Sam Elliott's in Mask?
Sure.
Wow. And Laura Dern. I don't want to look at that.
Laura Dern had an early career that a lot of people don't remember or know about. Mm. But yeah.
73 credits on IMDb. That's nothing to shake a stick at.
Yeah, she's been in a lot of stuff.
Oh, a lot of this is music video, short film things.
Yeah, although I always forget that Witches of Eastwick and Moonstruck were the same year. But I don't really think about Witches of Eastwick that often. That's a George Miller movie with Jack Nicholson, Michelle Pfeiffer, Susan Sarandon, and Cher.
Oh, I don't think about it often either because I don't know what this is, but I'm looking at pictures of Jack Nicholson making some real crazy faces.
He's basically the devil.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Based on what I'm seeing here.
Yes.
Devil wearing a tuxedo.
Essentially. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about that someday. Do a deep dive on Cher or George Miller.
Oh, it's based on a John Updike novel. Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. I know who that is.
Yeah, I know who that is too. And I've read all of his works.
Mm-hmm. Get all off the jokes.
There's nothing I love more than an Updike joke. This is...
It smells like Updike in here.
What's Updike?
John Updike, he's a writer.
I wish we could fire ourselves. Anyway.
We're very tired.
I think we've exhausted all that we can really say about this movie, because we have enthusiasm for it. But, you know, you already know all the stuff.
Yeah, do you think a lot of people haven't seen this movie? I mean, obviously the youngs.
Oh, there is no one in Generation Z that has seen Moonstruck. And I believe that it is primarily the kind of thing that my parents' generation would have watched.
Yeah, I think it still runs on, like, you know, the Sundance or IFC channel like once every 7 months or something.
Yeah, I mean, my Aunt Laura just quotes from this movie all the time. And, you know, mainly snap out of it and pantomime smacking people across the head.
Of course.
Yeah, because you got to do that too. You got to do pantomiming.
Ask her if she likes My Big Fat Greek Wedding next time you talk to her.
Sure. I mean, I'm assuming she does. But maybe
you should watch that one.
Maybe we can do that for the celebrate ringing the new year.
I've seen
You it. You don't want to watch the thing that you just said that we should watch?
No, you should watch it. I've seen
I
it.
It's not an endorsement.
You
Dan.
Do that. you need it for additional post ad hoc content to or context for your thing here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why do you hate rom-coms so much?
I don't. I just have seen them. Mm. I like The Proposal a lot.
Okay. Oh, did you see the new Channing Tatum, Sandra Bullock trailer thing?
No.
Oh, God, what's the name of it?
They're going to be in a movie together?
Oh, yeah, they're in a movie together. Yeah, this is The Lost City of D. I guess they just call it The Lost City for the...
Trailer 2022.
Drop the D.
Should I watch this now? Is this helpful?
I'll put a marker here.
Okay, marker. I'm going to watch movie clips, trailers. Okay, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
I figured you would.
Yeah, I would see that movie.
I mean, it has strong Proposal meets
Sonic
22
the
Jump Street. Yeah.
By the way, the new Sonic the Hedgehog got a trailer out.
I didn't watch it.
It's like Sonic the Hedgehog, except more.
I had a feeling.
Yeah.
I didn't think I was any of us gonna miss any important information from that.
I like Sonic the Hedgehog.
Mm-hmm. I know. We talked about it. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we will discuss the sequel.
Yeah, we should do that. Mm-hmm. I like Ben Schwartz.
I know you do. So I don't think we have anything else to say on the subject of movies. Ever. We're done.
Do you think hang on, let me Google something real quick.
Well, that really kind of got rid of the lead up when to the end there.
Did just this
nuked it.
Do you think Moonstruck inspired Thunderstruck?
I don't know what Thunderstruck is.
It's a song by AC/DC.
Oh.
Came out in 1990, apparently.
I'm going to guess no.
I don't know. It seems like fairly convenient timing.
That there are two different titles that have struck in them that are 4 years apart?
Yeah, name a third one. 3 years apart. Come on.
I don't know. I don't have...
Windstruck? Nobody's Windstruck or...
No. Dumbstruck?
No. Well, yeah. That's just a word. Sunstruck? Yeah. Nobody gets struck by the sun.
I guess.
Except maybe, you know, the guy with the wax wings.
Yeah. Bus struck? That's what happened to...
Her husband?
Her future husband, yeah. Former husband.
See, they should have had that in the trailer, and then there could have been a needle drop of, like, a rock jam where he goes, you've been bus struck, and then, you know, guitar riff and stuff.
Well, see, that's what you should do, is you should cut together a modern trailer for Moonstruck, and then... You know, have like
just with like a really slow, haunting piano version of That's Amore sung by some like echoey woman's voice.
Sure. Or a children's choir.
Children's choir for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there maybe like a slightly off brand Dean Martin song? Like
I feel like all Dean Martin songs are off brand.
I mean, like slightly less up the middle than That's Amore. That's you know, a little too obvious.
Mm hmm. I don't know. I mean,
I think Houston lends itself pretty good to that treatment. Okay. The children's choir.
Okay.
It's a very minimal song.
All right. I'll have to take your word for it.
So. I like Dean Martin songs. Because I'm Italian.
I prefer Frank and Tony to Dean Martin.
Tony Bennett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tony Bennett.
Wow.
Why?
Wow.
What's wrong with Tony Bennett?
Nothing wrong with Tony Bennett, but over Dean Martin, huh?
I mean, Dean Martin just kind of has a shtick, you know?
Yeah, he has a shtick, but, you know, he's a showman.
Is he?
He had a TV show. He did the roasts. He was an actor and things, too.
Is that what comes across when you listen to Dean Martin's music?
You know, it's the whole package is what we're talking about here.
The whole package.
It was like the Channing Tatum of his time. I don't even know what that means, but it's entirely wrong, so I take it back.
You know, sure. There was what's his name? Blah, 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 blah. I'm blanking on it. Hold on. James Darren. He had a brief singing career too, and he was a TV actor. And then he showed up on Star Trek Deep Space Nine in the later seasons playing a hologram of a lounge singer, a Vegas lounge singer. So he would actually sing bits in the show and then released a CD of his lounge hits, you know, and it's all the stuff you'd expect, like Mac the Knife and all that. So it's good. It's good.
I like lounge music. It's kind of just fun and relaxing in a weird way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Make yourself a cocktail, enjoy some lounge singing.
Yeah, you know, it's just a Michael Bublé.
Ugh, you and your Bublé. 2 weeks in a row with the Bublé.
What's wrong with Bublé?
Bublé is a parody of what he's doing.
Ooh.
I mean, he's good at it, but like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a little half smile and a wink to hold through the whole thing. It's not as honest as it used to be.
Yeah. Oh, you preferred it when they were honest showmen like Dean Martin?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When they were honest alcoholics.
Yeah. speaking of honest alcoholics, my wine's almost done, so you should wrap the episode up.
As the ice melted and made it taste bad.
This, you know, Malbec Cabernet blend, it is pretty watery now.
I don't think you should put ice in a Malbec.
No, I don't think I should either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can just turn your space heater off and it'll probably keep it cool.
Actually, funny story. I went to pick up this bottle and it was very cold because it was 50 degrees inside of the living room where the bottle was. So that's not good for the wine.
Please call an HVAC. You got to turn your heater on. Oh my God.
Tuesday.
Amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Bella. Hearts will play tippy-tippy-tay, like a gay tarantella. When the stars make you drool just like pasta fazool, that's amore. When you dance down the street with a cloud at your feet, you're in love. When you walk down in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see back in old Napoli, that's amore. That's amore.